I have chosen this day a passage of scripture from the book of Romans, the 8th chapter, and I would like to start reading at verse 18 and probably read down to about verse 29 before I complete this particular reading. But the 18th verse I would like us to pay particular attention to. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. And last night, as I was going over some things for a sermon today, this particular verse came to my attention. And then as I began trying to prepare something, it seemed like it just didn't work out. But as I went on, and as again today, as I looked into it further, I really see how much is really contained in this verse and other related verses that I want to present to you today. Number one, in this particular verse here, is the sufferings of this present time. And if we analyze various things that have been taking place recently, we find it seems that there is a lot of sufferings among the children of men. There are a lot in this church, even, of which we are a part of. But it further said here that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us, looking forward to another day wherein this glory will be revealed in us. And really, these sufferings are not worthy to be compared with this glorious thing that will one day transpire. And this is what I want to try to bring to your attention today. For in verse 19 it says, "For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God." And our body here is oftentimes referred to as the creature or the man of flesh or whatever it be. But it says it waiteth with expectation of one thing yet in the future. For the creature was made subject to vanity. And in this life we find that vanity is a part of the way of life. And we're subject to that vanity. It don't mean we have to partake of it, but we're subject to it. Not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope. And we find here that along with this, there is hope, something beyond this life. And the same that subjected the same in hope also was one that made us subject to vanity. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. And actually, today, there is a bondage of corruption in this world. Man is in corruption or in bondage to sin. And all too often, it is causing difficulties among the children of men. And yet it says here, this creature itself shall be delivered from this bondage one time of corruption. And it will be into the glorious liberty of the children of God. What those who follow God and keep his commandments shall attain one day. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now, even waiting for this thing that will yet be unfolded one day. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. Really, I find this particular reading in Romans takes maybe several readings to really get the impact out of it. I read it two or three different times today before it began to unfold, and I really think that those of you here this day, if you really want to get the full impact of it, I would suggest that you read it a few times at home. And this particular verse 23, I want to enlarge a little bit further. Not only the whole world waiting, but ourselves which had the first fruits of the Spirit, and I want to touch upon some of this fruit of the Spirit, as it's called another place, but here it says the first fruits of the Spirit, and our body actually bears spiritual fruits as well. It could bear the fruits of the body of sin, whichever we so choose, but there is a thing called the fruit of the Spirit, and here it says first fruits of the Spirit. And it says we really are waiting within ourselves for the adoption, for the whole complete gathering in to the fold of God. In other words, the redemption of our body, the whole complete redemption of our body. And I think one verse, a few verses that really explain that is in Luke 20, 30 through 36. I mean 34 through 36. And this particular reading here, we find that there came to Jesus wanting to know about the resurrection and whose wife a certain person would be. And in this particular reading, we find that this one woman had married a brother, and he died, and finally she married in turn six other brothers. It says brethren here, the seven brethren. And they all died, and leaving her, and finally she died. And they asked, now, whose wife shall this person be in the resurrection? Who's she going to belong to? And Jesus answering said unto them, in verse 34, the children of this world marry and are given in marriage, but they which shall be accounted worthy to obtain that world, in other words, that world, heavenly world, and the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage. In other words, that isn't a part of that life. Neither can they die. Now, this is significant. Anymore, for they are equal unto the angels. Those who attain that life are equal unto the angels, and are the children of God, being the children of the resurrection. And so that really shows a little more clearly the exact thing, what people are waiting for, this adoption, even the redemption of our body. In verse 24, for we are saved by hope. But hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, what doth he yet hope for? Or why doth he yet hope for? But if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patient wait for it. So this is showing here in this life, if our hope becomes knowledge, then it has no further impact. The same with faith becomes knowledge. You no longer have faith. And if your hope becomes knowledge, you no longer have hope. But this is a thing here, as far as the resurrection and this great plan of redemption, and a time one day to live with Christ and God in eternity. It says here, but if we hope for that we see not, and right now we don't see this particular thing, then do we with patience wait for it. Now this is a thing that we cannot have today. It isn't the time to have it. And no matter how much we might want it today, and all the glorious things connected with it, this day is ours to prepare to meet God and to live with Him at that day. And so we must with patience wait for that day. And so going back to our first verse here, he reckoned that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. And yet in all this, several references that I want to bring out today. Number one shows of things of this life and things that man must endure and have patience with and different things like this. And we find also, though, with these various writers bringing out in the same verse a hope of something beyond this grave, a hope of eternal life. And there's one that I quite often use that I want to turn to in the 17th chapter of the book of Alma. And this is in verses 3 and 4. And as Helaman, as Alma spoke to his son Helaman, He told him to hear his words and learn of me. Or in other words, learn of the life plan of Jesus Christ that he came here for us to follow. And then he says, for I do know that whosoever shall put their trust in God shall be supported in their trials and in their troubles and in their afflictions and shall be lifted up at the last day. And so we see here very clearly outlined, it didn't say that this life would be a time free from troubles and sufferings and afflictions. It didn't say it would be that way. It didn't say it wouldn't have trials in it. But Alma was a witness and knew in his own life that he had been supported in all these circumstances. And not only that, he had the further testimony that one day he could be lifted up and live with Christ and God in eternity. And so this is the hope of people who believe in Christ and in his redeeming power. And I would not that you think I know it of myself, he said, not of the temporal, but of the spiritual, not of the carnal mind, but of God. He knew this. And all we have to do is turn over to verse 25 and 26, and we can find the very answer of what Alma was trying to tell his son here. And I have been supported under trials and troubles of every kind. And that's a lot. Yea, in all manner of afflictions. Yea, God has delivered me from prison and from bonds and from death. Yea, and I do put my trust in him, and he will still deliver me. Now there is a testimony. In all this, he will put his trust in him. He's been supported in these things, and he says he will still deliver me. And so I thought today of the various things that are happening among our people. And we have some in very grievous circumstances, with physical afflictions and accident, some with mental torment, and others maybe even with spiritual difficulties. And in all this, so these things are happening for a purpose. There is trials and there will be troubles, but there is a promise of a hope one day. And I know that he will raise me up at the last day to dwell with him in glory. Yea, and I will praise him forever. That was his testimony. For he has brought our fathers out of Egypt, and he has swallowed up the Egyptians in the Red Sea, and he led them by his power unto the promised land, even this land upon which Alma was now speaking. And then on the rest of this here, it's got some marvelous readings, but I won't go into it. But really, when we analyze this, we see that there are some things that are going to take place. And we do know that at a certain time, in life's whole plan of man, there will come a time toward the end, and the devil will realize more fully that his time is short. And he's going to go out to deceive the nation in a multitude of ways. He's going to literally torment mankind in other ways. And I believe he can afflict man, as a matter of fact. There's many things that he can do, and let us not ever underestimate the powers of that evil one. But in all this, there is still the hope of the redemption that comes through Jesus Christ. And this is what I want to point our minds toward. Even though this day we may have some sufferings in the flesh, we may have some grievous moments, yet in all this, there is hope beyond the grave. And this is what we can glory in this day. And I know that in my own life, as I've seen it unfold, and certainly not as much yet as Alma, but who knows what yet will be expected of me or any one of you in this room. Who knows? Not only those of the ministry, but of the lay members as well. We don't know how much may be expected of each and every one of you. Because this is a thing that is not solely a ministerial responsibility, this great proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because by our example and our association with people, we can proclaim it. We can testify of the goodness of Jesus Christ to others. We know of the life plan of salvation, we should share it with others. And I know even in my recent journeys how much I was really dependent upon God. How often I prayed and God heard that prayer. And I know that without Him, that many times I could not have functioned. And so I know of a surety that God lives and He does hear and answer prayer. I know that He has sustained me and made it possible for me to function even when I did not feel well. I know this because it happened in my own life. There's many things required of man, and so how important it is that we have a God who really cares. I would like to turn to the 1 Peter and the 4th chapter, verses 12 through 16. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. In other words, just because all these things happen in this life, we don't necessarily think that we're the only one it is ever happening to. And some really wonders, and sometimes I have been caused to wonder why certain ones seemingly are having a whole bunch of things heaped upon them to endure or bear, or grievous happenings are taking place in their lives. But also, as I thought upon this, I am of the idea and opinion that each one will be tried. It may be differently. It may not be exactly the same, and I wouldn't even suppose it would be exactly the same. But I'm also of this opinion that every one of these trials will be just as much real as those we may think are going through so much trial. A lot of times, maybe it isn't really a thing in one's family or a grievous sickness or something like this. It may be something else. And I know even myself, and I've had cause to say this year, that this has been, I believe, the most trying year in my life thus far. I'm not saying next year might not be more so, but it's been very trying. And these trials have been in many different ways. And I'm here this day because of the help of God and how great He actually is. I might cite a little answer to prayer or the importance of praying over things. I have tried to regularly remember to pray over my journeys. And the morning that I left Canada to go to Montana, and that was in October, I had prayed for God's watch care, and I traveled a darkened highway that morning, not yet quite light enough to see good, and it was not a wide road in the particular place I was in. And I saw the headlights of a truck coming. And really, you know, the headlights of a truck wouldn't concern you so much, but when I got closer, I saw that it was carrying a wide load, which I thought was probably sticking over at least 2 foot on each side. And this wide load was not marked by any sign or lights. And there I was on this highway, that close, and how close I was to that load, I will never know. But I immediately pulled to the right, and I was already over a bit, and I missed it. I'm here today, it's fairly evident, because if I'd have been where it was, it would have wiped me out. And there was a second wide load following too, but I was prepared for it. But I immediately thanked God for His watch care. Because I believe that without a doubt I was preserved that day upon that highway. And so we see how much we're really dependent upon God. I really couldn't function without God in my life. And I could go on, and I'm afraid if I go on this, I've got some other things I'd like to share with you too, but I'm afraid that I might not get this particular sermon brought to your attention that I want to bring out this day. So maybe I better leave that for the moment, because I have other things of God's goodness and what He's done for me, as well as some very trying things in my life. So we don't think it has to necessarily be some strange thing just because it happened to us. But rejoice Now that's kind of an odd thing to say when you're having trials and tribulations. It says rejoice inasmuch as you're partakers of Christ's suffering. You know, he suffered more than any man could suffer, or more than any man will ever suffer. That's what Christ did for you and I and for the peoples of this world. So when it comes to knowing sufferings, he was a first-hand witness and knew exactly what suffering was. And so it says when we're called upon to be tried, or we are having sufferings or afflictions or things of this nature, it says rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. When that glory is one day revealed, you will have exceeding joy beyond any of the joy you would know here. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye. This will be another part of the trials of the children of men that I'm sure most certainly will shortly unfold, that you will be reproached for the name of Christ, a new added thing, which really up to this time there has been some, but not nearly as much as will be. For the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. So if you're reproached for the name of Christ, it says, happy are ye. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other man's or men's matters. And it seems like all too often, many of our sufferings in this life are things that we're responsible for ourselves. Many of the things that cause us anxiety of mind, that we have really been the cause of them being there. And I'm not trying to say every affliction man has is pointed to the person individually, because I'm not going to go that far out. But what I'm trying to say, many things we suffer really have been needless. Is the song we sometimes sing, oh, what needless pain we bear, all because we do not carry everything to him in prayer. That's the song, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. If any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf, that you've been accounted worthy to suffer for Jesus Christ's sake. Let's turn in this same book of Peter to the first chapter and start with verse 6. Now, this is a little note I copied down here, and I want to bring it out, though, before we go on any further. Just because we have to suffer in this life, let us not give up. Like Paul said, what is important is that we fought the good fight of faith. And so, really, there's going to be things we're going to have to fight in this life. And sin is one of them. Depression is another, and discouragement is another. Those are things we must fight in this life, because we live in a day of discouragement and depression and trial of man, maybe such as has never been placed upon mankind. Because as Daniel said, and you've heard me bring this out before, in Daniel 12:1, it would be a time of trouble such as has never been since there was a nation down to that time, or ever will be. Words similar to that. So it will be a time of trouble and trial, but it don't mean that we need to give up. As one other song we sometimes sing, and for the victory we will fight or perish in the field. We've got God on our side if we want to reach out and avail his great power for us. But we have to reach out if we really want it. And we have to fight for certain things. We have to fight against the forces of evil. Going down in verse 6 to the first chapter of 1 Peter. Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations. And these temptations are placed before the children of men. Manifold temptations. And I thought upon this, and I got a little different thought on the temptation than I normally have had. A lot of times we think of temptation as sin and things that are placed before us. And that is a part of temptation. But I really think it's got a broader application. I believe that in a person's suffering, that he could be tempted by the devil and be led astray. That's a little different thought than I thought, than I normally would think upon temptation. But I believe it's highly possible. And also I believe that in certain trials that come upon us, I believe that there, in a way, a manner of temptation is placed there to see if you really got the stuff to stand up under these trials. And if you haven't, then you yield to temptation. So they really do tie together. Besides all the lust of the flesh that is placed before man to entice and tempt him. Now before I go on here, I want to turn to James 1, the 12th verse, and just read it. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. All these things, no matter what they are. When he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. So you see how many of these verses, number one shows enduring temptation, enduring suffering, and then the promise of a crown of life or a future redemption with Christ and God. And I really, you read over these things sometimes and you really pass this. You might gather up the temptation part, but not realize fully of the other end of it. So in this same verse, there's things that could defile man, and yet in these same verses are things held out in a way of hope toward them. That the trial of your faith, in verse 7, being more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen ye love, and whom though now ye see him not, yet believing ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. And so that is the end of the faith of the children of men, is the salvation of their souls. And really, this is the purpose why we gather here this day. This is the main purpose, not only the fellowship with one another and the commandment to worship one with another and to worship before God, but we have further important here, and that is that we might have a promise of salvation one day. And this trial of our faith is more precious than gold that does perish. I would like to turn back now again to the 8th chapter of the book of Romans and read verses 14 through 17. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. So those who are really led by the Spirit of God, they become the sons of God. Daughters of God as well. For ye have not received the spirit of bondage, again to fear. Bondage to sin, see. But ye have received the spirit of adoption. This received, impossible to be received into the kingdom of God, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. So here it says the Spirit bears witness of this, and why would they be called the children of God? It's because they were walking and behaving and acting like the children of God. That is why. And if children, now notice this, then heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we may suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. And there is another verse with a lot in it. A promise of heirs and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him. And so it looks like some of these things may be a part of our life, that we may be glorified together. Now, long-suffering is one of the fruits of the Spirit. We turn to Galatians, the 5th chapter, and we find these various gifts or fruit of the Spirit elaborated in verses 22 through 25. And it tells that the fruit of the Spirit is, and it lists 9 of them here. And I want you to notice about number 4 is long-suffering, a little different in nature to some of the others. Number one, as we wouldn't suppose it would be any place else, is love. That is a fruit of the Spirit, and one of the things I want to build upon a bit later. And then is joy, is another fruit of the Spirit, and peace. Now, these are the things that can be man's today. It isn't waiting for a future life somewhere to enjoy some great and marvelous things. Even today, this joy and peace can be yours. And then it says, long-suffering is a fruit of the Spirit. This is a thing that man must have as a part of his fruit. Gentleness is a part of the fruit of the Spirit. This is the type of people we should be. Goodness, those with faith, those with meekness, and those with temperance. We should be a meek people and a temperate people. And so many of these things really aren't functioning like they should be in the individual lives of the children of men. Temperance is one. Not only maybe a thing of drink or eating, but in the way we utilize our time. I think in the busy world that we live in, that temperance is one of the very important things to consider on how we spend our time and how we may waste our time, as a matter of fact. Temperance involves a lot. And of course we know that the meek will one day inherit the earth, so it is important. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. And if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. And we have here in this life the affections and lusts of the flesh. But it says those that really live in the Spirit also walk in the Spirit. And those that are Christ have actually crucified these things. I would like to turn over to Colossians, the 3rd chapter, and this is found in verses 12 through 14. And Paul said, "Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, those of you who claim to do certain things concerning God." And to be the elect of God, it is certainly you must have put on the armor of righteousness. And then it says, holy and beloved. And it says, put on what? Bowels of mercies. You're supposed to have mercy in your individual life. And blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, as Christ said. Kindness is another thing that those who are the elect of God should have as a part of their makeup. Humbleness of mind, and how different this is to the general inclination of the man of the flesh or the carnal mind. And then it says meekness, and then you notice this word coming up again, long-suffering. That should be a part of the children of men. Forbearing one another, and this means to bear with or endure one another in spite of the differences we may find in one another, and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things, put on charity. We find that charity is considered rather high, it says, which is the bond of perfectness. And so we have listed here this great thing called charity. You know, when you go to analyzing it, you know, one of the things we're going to find out there, that those who have charity suffer long, or long-suffering. And I want to turn to Moroni 7, and it's on page 768, and just read a bit there. Actually, to start with, I want to read verses 51 and 52. Says here, charity suffereth long and is kind. And as I brought out to start with here from Romans 8:17 and 18, that it said concerning the sufferings of this present time, and that is part of our life. And charity suffereth long, and is kind, and envieth not. So those that really, and this charity here, as we go on here in a little bit, it will say that it is the pure love of Christ. And those that have this pure love of Christ in their lives, they are long-suffering, or they suffer long. They're kind to their fellow beings. They do not envy. They're not puffed up. They seeketh not their own or their own glory in this. Is not easily provoked. So those who have charity are not easily provoked. And in a day of which anger is a lot a part of the lives of the children of men, and maybe a part of the lives of many wives and husbands and others, it says they're not easily provoked if they have charity. And then it says, thinketh no evil. And what an involving thing that is. Each one of us are a product of our thoughts. We really are. And as a man thinketh, so he is. And it says here, thinketh no evil. And really, when you analyze this, how involving charity really is, it is really an involving thing. Rejoiceth not in iniquity. And there are those today that do rejoice in iniquity. And I would like to read a side reference from Romans 1, 32. And this followed many things of unrighteousness and fornication and different things that Paul was speaking against. Backbiters and those that did not have natural affection and who were unmerciful and who envied and murdered and had deceit in their lives and all manner of things like this. And then he says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but notice this, but have pleasure in them that do them. So a lot of times people have pleasure in those who do iniquity and really not even a part of that iniquity. And this says here that the judgment of God is sure against such who have pleasure in those that do these iniquitous things. And this said the same thing here. And rejoices not in iniquity. In other words, man should not rejoice in iniquity. But rejoices in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, and that's goodly things, we know, and to bear. Now there's another thing that says, beareth all things. So we're going to have to bear some things in this life. That is a part of our Christian makeup, of our love of Christ that is in our lives. Believeth all things, hopeth all things, and endureth all things. So there's some things we may have to endure. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, if ye have not charity, ye are nothing, for charity never faileth. Wherefore, cleave unto charity, which is the greatest of all, for all things must fail. But charity is a pure love of Christ, and it endureth forever. It will be here at the end, and forever and ever. And whoso is found possessed of it at the last day, it shall be well with them. And really, those who have this charity, it shall be well with them. Now, I would like to back up here and read a little further in this particular reading. In verse 45, because with this charity, there is other things required to get it. And so he was going to speak concerning this thing called hope. How is it that ye can attain unto faith, save ye shall have hope? So if you really want to have this great faith, we must have hope. And what is it that you shall hope for? And this is the verse I want us to note. Behold, I say unto you that ye shall have hope through the atonement of Christ. That is the hope that we shall have. And the power of his resurrection, to be raised into life eternal. Now there is the hope. And this because of your faith in him according to the promise. Wherefore, if a man have faith, he must needs have hope. For without faith, there cannot be any hope. And so without this faith, there cannot be any hope. We have to have something. And again, behold, I say unto you, that he cannot have faith and hope, save he shall be meek and lowly of heart. Now I want you to notice how really involving this whole thing is. we're to become meek and lowly in heart, or we really can't have this faith and hope. This is what it says here. If people don't have it, if so, his faith and hope is vain. For none is acceptable before God, save the meek and lowly of heart. So really, to become acceptable in the sight of God, it is those who are meek and lowly of heart. And again, how contrary is this to the very nature of man? The vainness of man is to be proud and high. But yet Christ was not that way. He says, come unto me and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest for your souls. So if you really want that inner peace this day, it can be yours. It is because you've come unto Jesus Christ. You've learned of this meek and lowly man. You've become meek and lowly, and you've learned of the way of life that is contained in these scriptures. And if a man be meek and lowly in heart, and confesses by the power of the Holy Ghost that Jesus is the Christ, he must needs have charity. For if he have not charity, is nothing. Wherefore, he must needs have charity. So really, that is vital. That pure love of Christ is a thing. When we're enduring all things, when we're bearing all things, when we're long-suffering, when we're gentle and kind and don't envy, it is showing to God that we really have this pure love of Christ. And verse 53, wherefore, my beloved brethren, pray unto the Father with all the energy of heart, that ye may be filled with this love which he hath bestowed upon all who are the true followers of his Son, Jesus Christ, that ye may become the sons of God, that when he shall appear, we shall be like him. For we shall see him as he is, that we may have this hope, that we may be purified even as he is pure. It really has a lot in that. And this pure love of Christ is bestowed upon all who are the true followers of Jesus Christ. So I hope that we may unite our forces together and have this pure love of Christ among us. I would like to turn to 1 John, the 3rd chapter, and read the first 3 verses. Beloved, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. And there are several places here that we can become the sons of God by doing these things. We just read it here. You can become the sons of God. And it says, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself even as he is pure. And you see, this ties rather well with the rest of these scriptures this day. And this hope can be a part of our individual lives, no matter who we are or where we are. And we go on down in this particular verse, in verse 7 and 8, it says, little children, let no man deceive you. He that doeth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. It is he that has went about to deceive the children of men. It is he that is causing much of the heartache in this world today. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. And really, that again is a very significant happening. I would like to turn now to Revelations, the 3rd chapter. And have verses 20 and 21. A verse of invitation. Jesus Christ saying, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him, and he with me. So we have here an open door, if we will but open the door. But we have to knock. And we have some great promises that are held out to each and every one of us. But the greatest of these is verse 21. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. So Jesus Christ overcame the things of the flesh. He overcame the man of sin. He endured temptation, all manner of temptation. He had trials and tribulations, and he was an example of suffering and long-suffering before the children of men. And I think Paul was well aware of this. And so in many of his writings, he shows the importance of our suffering together, of our enduring together, of our bearing these things together. And not only together, but individually. And then the promise one day that those who overcome may be able to sit down with Jesus Christ in his throne. And for this, I am thankful, and we each should be thankful as well.